Without the same and that's where I was worrying.
Ready to go. Call this joint meeting of the Houghton Community Council and Kirkland Planning Commission to order. We have roll call, please.
Kelly Curtis.
Here.
Brian Gothrop.
Here.
Bill Goggins. John Kepler.
Here.
Betsy Pringle.
Here.
Elsie Weber.
Here.
Rick Whitney.
Here.
And Planning Commission, Carter Bagg. Colleen Cullen.
Here.
Eric Law Liberty.
Here.
Mike Miller.
Here.
Glenn Peterson.
Here.
Sandeep Singhal. Matthew Pruitt.
Here. So for our agenda tonight, we have some minutes to approve. We'll have an opportunity for the audience to provide comments. And then we have a discussion of the Houghton Everest Neighborhood Center Plan and Sixth Street Corridor Study. We're going to add one item after that, staff presentation of the City Council's action on low-impact development zoning code amendments, with an opportunity for the Planning Commission to add comments or discussion related to the recommendations that have been made, if they chose choose. Finally, the administrative reports, and then a final comments from the audience opportunity. So with the minutes, let's take them one meeting at a time. These are all minutes from joint meetings, so we will jointly be approving these. Starting with the minutes for September 8th, are there any additions or corrections to those minutes? Nobody else has one. I do have one. On item 7A, under administrative reports and planning commission discussion, there, it says Mr. Shields reported the city council adopted a 100-foot marijuana buffer from daycares. That is correct, except that is not applicable in Houghton. And I think it needs to be noted as such. Any other additions, corrections? No. Okay, could I have a motion to approve the minutes with that correction?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Good.
Do we need to separately move?
Yeah, do you want to have it separate?
I don't know.
Probably makes sense to do it that
sure.
way. Yeah.
Okay. Any additions or corrections to the Planning Commission?
No. Will we accept them as corrected by Mr. Whitney?
Second.
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Okay. Next, the minutes for the September 29th meeting. Any additions or corrections? Anyone care to make a motion to approve those minutes?
So moved.
Second it.
Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Great. Any opposed? Eric?
Yeah. All right. Let's just not. For both the 29th and the 8th, does anyone have any corrections or additions?
And we already covered the 8th.
29th.
Oh, I'm sorry. 29th.
October
24th. 29th and October 24th are the ones remaining.
Yeah. Okay. Can I have a motion then?
Move we approve October 24 and September 29th meeting.
Second.
Minutes. All those in favor say aye.
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 Okay. And with the Houghton Community Council, any additions, corrections to the October 24th minutes? Hearing none?
No.
Okay. We need a motion to approve?
Move we.
Approve them as presented? Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed?
Aye.
All right. Cool. So with that, we have opportunities for the audience to comment, and I've got some people who've signed up, and if there's anyone else, please, I'll let the record show that Bill Goggins just joined us. There's a sign-up sheet over there. First person who signed up is Tom Markle. Tom? Yes, please, come up to the podium, and we have a three-minute, I think you guys know the drill, but is there a problem with the...
We're trying to get our PowerPoint all set up.
Sorry, we're just having trouble pulling up the PowerPoint we're going to use, so maybe if we can just work to the side and
sure.
have people speak over here.
Sure.
Thank you.
Let me create a little space for myself here. Good evening. I'm Tom Markle. I'm the CEO of the Nelson Legacy Group. We're a family-owned business, and we are the owners of the Houghton Center. We have been members of the community since the early 1970s. I served on the Houghton Neighborhood Plan Advisory Committee, which was adopted by the Planning Commission, the Houghton Community Council, and the Kirkland City Council several years ago. And as I previously publicly stated on many occasions, we have a very long-term interest in this Houghton Everest plan. We have no intention in the near term of redeveloping, nor do we have the capacity to do that. And as I've shared again very publicly, our lease with Metropolitan Markets really precludes us from doing anything for a great deal of time. However, I want to talk to you about the reality of our situation. Our center has old and inefficient spaces. Our two anchor tenants, Bartels and Met Markets, have spaces that are much less than what they desire and quite frankly, will find economically viable long term. Bartels has an 8,000 square foot space. Their current business model calls for 12. Met Markets has an approximately 28,000 square foot space. Their business model calls for 35,000 square feet. As I recall, when I was on the advisory committee, the community told us in many of these sessions we had over a couple year period that the community would like to see more local retail, more services, and more public spaces. Unfortunately, we can't do that because we are 100% parked under the code as it's written today. To grow store areas, to create modern store areas, and to provide more public amenities, we need to create parking. The only way we can create parking is by going underground. That's very expensive, $30,000 to $35,000 per parking stall, and we need to get some economies of scale to make all that work. As we look at the discussion going on in the community and your deliberations, it appears to us the community really has two choices. The first choice is to keep the retail they have and perhaps get new additional retail and services, or see Houghton Center gradually lose merchants, slowly decline, and effectively see residents required to get in their cars to drive elsewhere to get the services and goods they can buy today. Our vision in 14 or 15 years, not in the near future, is to build five stories with staggered upper floors to preserve views and eliminate this perception of mass everyone's concerned about, to have large and efficient first floor retail facing onto 68th, 106th, and 108th, to have upper floors apartments and services for the community, so that people who work in Houghton can live in Houghton, and neighborhood business offices for lawyers, real estate agents, lawyers, etc. Have underground parking, which would get a lot of the employee parking off the streets, which I know is a neighborhood concern, and to have affordable housing. So thank you.
Thank you, Tom. Next is Lisa McConnell.
Good evening, Council and Commissioners. My name is Lisa McConnell. I saw most of you at the November 2nd workshop, and I know most of you have taken the survey. I've been personally dealing with this since 2008 when we did the neighborhood plan update. Eric and Angela and the planning department so far have been very open about letting all the issues be on the table for discussion. But with the exception of planners and Houghton Community Council members, most people at the meeting do not know what to ask about or for. This is kind of like going to a restaurant and being told that you can order anything you want, but not being given a menu. So there were some noticeable lacks of menu items, to continue the metaphor, in the survey and at the meeting. And I'm going to address just a few of the major ones that I found concerning. In the neighborhood plan, page 70 of your packet, there's policy CH 7.3, and it states, allowing building heights to step up to five stories if attention given to building modulation and upper story step backs. Not once did I hear discussion or a visual example given as to what an upper story step back is, which is unfortunate because we have a very nice example in the Houghton Center, neighborhood center, with the Northwest University office building, which is a three-story building from the street, and you're looking at it, it has a setback from the sidewalk as well as upper story stepbacks. And when this is pointed out to people, they go, oh, that's a three-story building. And I think it changes the discussion when you're talking about building height and mass and what you can do to modulate that sort of thing. Number two, density limits. Again, there was no mention of this, and this is of particular importance as we move from a commercial to a mixed use, and we include properties to the west and south of 68. Three, special restrictions and requirements for those properties that are adjacent to the CKC were not mentioned. Four, design review. There's none currently, and again, the pros and cons of this were not discussed. Five, now I'm going to mention the elephant in the room, or the subject that shall remain nameless, which is parking. As a transportation commissioner, this is one we never like to really tackle, but it always is an issue. Parking and its cost to build drives a lot of what gets put into this, as Tom Merkel had just previously mentioned, in this area, so it's an important issue to understand and discuss. Most people do not know about the right-size parking reductions that are new, and how it will affect this area. Employee parking was mentioned, but no solutions were given. In the transportation 6th Street corridor section of the workshop, on-street parking on 68th was not discussed as in pro-con issues. And most of the transportation stuff I'm going to leave for the transportation discussion on this. Thank you very much for your time and consideration.
Thank you, Lisa. Next is Doug Waddell.
Well, hello again. It seems like just yesterday we were going through this. I, like Tom, was part of the, Doug Waddell, 13 Central, Kirkland. We own the property just west of Bank of America. It's currently known as Houghton Court Apartments. Like Tom mentioned, I was part of the process, whatever it was, 6 or 7 years ago with everyone in the, most everyone in this room, and was with the Lakeview Neighborhood Group and the Houghton Neighborhood Group when it was recommended and voted in favor of considering this from higher density multifamily. I feel strongly that it should be continued to be considered for that or actually be that, mainly due to the facts. The facts are that it makes complete sense. It is right on the Kirkland corridor. People can walk to and from Google. Some of those people that currently drive down from 405 or up from Lake Washington Boulevard could walk. It's a walkable community, which is a big deal today in all planning areas. You can walk to shopping, you can walk to other employment, you can walk to your bank and get your coffee, walk to PCC, walk to Met Market. You know, it keeps people out of their cars. The other thing is that the city really needs, and Houghton really needs, and if you read the paper or watch the news, we need a diversity of housing. And Houghton's losing it. I mean, if you drive up and down State Street or Lake Washington Boulevard, I mean, what little rental property you have, you're losing, and anything that's going in is $1.8 million and up. And if that's what we want long term, then you should vote against what I'm talking about. But we're losing what we have. And from my records, Houghton hasn't had a new multifamily, Central Houghton, for 40 years. And if you include Lakeview, which is Carillon, it's been 30 years. Yet your demographics, your employment, your everything has increased. I mean, we really need to keep up. I mean, we house very important people that are a big part of the community. I have people that live in my building for 35 years. And they're as part of the churches and the organizations and the community and the shopping as anyone else, but they're going to be priced out of the area. You know, I hear some people say, well, Google people can afford multi-million dollar homes. Well, yeah, some of them can, but some of them don't want to. And a lot of them can't. I mean, there's a lot of administrative help people there that would love to be able to walk to work but can't afford to put $600,000 down on a $2 million home. So I think, you know, I'm fairly passionate about this. It's not a money deal. I can sit down with anybody, and actually it's going the other direction right now, meaning it's probably worth more for single family than it is for multifamily. It's a need. It's a big need, and Houghton hasn't kept up at all. Lastly, I'll leave you that, you know, we talk about the setbacks and visualizations and all that. I have done some renderings that do have the building setback, that have public amenities, that have a connection to the Kirkland corridor. I forgot to mention that there's a temporary easement across my property right now. So if anyone wants to see that, I'm happy to show it to them. Thank you.
Thank you, Doug. Next is John Morosco.
evening, excuse me, council and commission members. My name's John Morosco, and I'm here this evening to represent PCC's interest in the property to the north of Tom Markle's property that houses the Metropolitan Market. PCC is proud that we have served Kirkland for nearly four decades, and we remain committed to this community. Like many of our business and residential neighbors, we've followed the various zoning conversations and proposals that have been considered over the years at our Everest and Houghton location. With our land ownership partner, we're supportive of increased density and height up to five stories. And as a business owner, we like to be part of mixed-use developments that include a variety of commercial and residential uses. They generate activity and vitality for both business owners and neighbors alike. With that said, neighborhood character and compatibility are very important to us, and we should carefully be considered as part of any master planning effort. PCC is here to help with input with respect to the master plan, and we welcome questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next is Margaret Bull.
Hi, I'm Margaret Bull. I live at 6225 108th Place Northeast. I don't have like a really nice presentation here, but I'll wing it. I just have to say one thing about this process, and I'm kind of glad the neighbors are being included, but because I went through the Park Place projects a few years back, I just want to say one thing about zoning and what we're hearing now. I understand the property owners needing a certain amount of height for what they need, but the problem was at Park Place they had zoning with a certain amount of height, but then when they finally got around to building on that property, oh no, it would just be a bunch of ugly buildings unless they could add another few stories and end up with eight stories instead of five. So we're hearing right now, oh, we're not going to build, but to really do an economically feasible thing, you got to have pay for the parking and it's got to be bigger, which is fine. I can understand that, but I always worry that we're going to say, oh, yes, we'll do this, and then a few years down the line, someone's going to say, oh, we can't do that. You need to give us this and this, and so we can actually do something. So I had that concern about all these zoning discussions is that later it'll be waived, exempted. So even though I understand about development, I see that a problem as part of the planning in Kirkland. The other thing I have to say is, having been to that last meeting at Northwest University, one of my concerns is how many different things might be going on that, even though I know I have a public street, I happen to have one of the closest public streets where you can park to Met Market, and some of the other people in the local community had this same problem where you build bigger, there's not going to be employee parking necessarily built. It will be for other purposes. So when you've got employees that might need to park on my street, you've got people on 108th who have visitors or an electric van, they need to park on my street because they can't park on 108th. Then you have my neighbor who has a van pool car. She parks on the street. Then you have all the people who can't sit on a bus unless they get on early, because you don't get to sit on a bus if you go down to Houghton Park and ride. So it's the many different needs that mean people need parking on my street. And I just wonder if we build too much, there just isn't going to be the street parking. So that's like what I have to contribute today. Next time I'll say something else. Thanks.
Thank you, Margaret. Next is Ned Clapp.
I'm Ned Clapp. Mr. Chairman, I apologize. I mistook the form as a general sign-in, but I would just like to echo Mr. Morosco's remarks on behalf of PCC. Thank you.
Okay, very well. Are there any other people who signed up over on the other sign-up sheet?
John. What was his name?
Please state your name and address, since I don't have that.
Hi, yeah. I put my name on there last. Hi, I'm Jan Young, and I'm a resident of Houghton, and I did send an email out to you as well as to the City Council and to the CAN group. And so I'm just going to highlight certain paragraphs of this letter that I sent. As a longtime citizen of Kirkland, I see the need for modest development in this area. I agree that updating the center and better land use is needed to justify the land values and economic needs of the businesses there. However, I do not feel this area warrants a need for aggressive development, such as a 3 to 5 story mixed-use buildings, to meet expected growth. When you consider the current development projects taking place now, for example, Kirkland Urban, Downtown Kirkland, and Totem Lake, there is ample residential and business growth being met by these areas, and I've confirmed this with a couple of people from the city. These key centers would also accommodate the increase in traffic flow, since each area is near the main highway and major arterials off the highway, such as Northeast 124th and Northeast 85th. I envision updating the center much like Park Lane downtown Kirkland, that has welcoming, open, walkable common areas, and to have at most another story of office and or business spaces above it. I feel like this would incorporate the family-oriented neighborhood feel of Houghton. Traffic congestion, I believe, won't be relieved unless the public transit along 108th is improved and less people drive cars. Realistically, I don't see how widening the streets and or adding traffic circles are even possible or would relieve traffic. Perhaps having an in-town circular transit that travels through South Kirkland parking lot, along 108th to Downtown Transit Center, along Lake Washington Boulevard and back, might help with the traffic. And this would also be helpful to increase shoppers down to the downtown businesses and retail centers for the local community. More frequent metro bus services during peak times should also be factored in the interim, and I understand this is already being planned with Metro. Since the Cross Kirkland Corridor was noted as the only open green space in this development area, I really feel like it should be preserved as a nature trail and not used for mass transit. I sincerely urge the City Planning Department, along with the City and Houghton Councils and consultants, to put the needs of the immediate surrounding neighborhoods first and foremost, employees second, and the developers last. And also, I would rather really see my tax dollars spent on improving citywide roads, utilities and infrastructure first, and holding off on further development in Houghton until we're really sure that the infrastructure is adequately served there. So only then I think that development and further density can be sufficiently accommodated. Thank you.
Thank you, Jan. Is there anyone else who would care to speak at this time? Okay, then.
I have a question if I could. John Roscoe, could you please tell me the current square footage of PCC?
Very approximately, it's about 8,500 square feet. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. So with that, we will move into the discussion of the Houghton Neighborhood Center Plan and the Sixth Street Corridor Study. And I think Angela is going to be leading that.
I am. Good evening.
Hey.
I'm Angela Ruggieri, and I'm with the Planning Department staff. So mainly we're here tonight to just give you an update of what staff and the consultants have been working on throughout the summer and the fall. And so one of the big things is the survey. The survey has now been closed, and Deborah Munkberg is here, and she's going to give you an overview of what we found out through the survey that we did on this area. And then we also want to talk to you a little bit about the community workshop that we had. A number of you were there, which is great, so you saw it firsthand. But for those who couldn't make it, we want to bring you up to date on that. And then finally, we want to talk a little bit about our idea for a development continuum, which means that eventually we're going to need to come forward at the public hearing with some options, different sizes of development, and then what we feel we could ask for in exchange for that development. And so we're going to discuss that with you and hopefully get some feedback on what you think is appropriate to look at further. So Deborah's here to give an update. At the end, I'll come back and tell you about our next meetings and what we see coming up in the future. Okay. So if I can get her PowerPoint up, we will go forward. All and right. I think I can.
Congratulations.
Amazing. Hi, my name again is Deborah Munkberg, and it looks like the screen is kind of flickery. Is that just typical? Okay.
It's kind of been the way it's been the last couple meetings we've had.
Okay. All right. Well, then I'll just
not necessarily a good thing.
Proceed ahead. So, as Angela said, I wanted to just take a few minutes and talk a little bit about the online survey and about the community workshop. I think that you received a report about the community workshop in your packets, and we're in the process right now of just finishing out the written report on the online survey that gives a more detailed report on all the findings that will be forwarded to you shortly. So this will just kind of hit the highlights. So for the online survey, I think that when we first started this project, one of the major goals was to try and engage a very large number of participants, and there was some discussion about how best to do that, and I think ultimately the decision was probably a survey, given the time of year that it was our best option for getting a lot of people aware of and involved in the project. So that was one of the prime purposes, provide a kind of an easy way for people to provide feedback and then to provide some insight into public opinion. So the survey ran for about 10 weeks from August 22nd to October 28th, and we got a little over 750 participants. So we feel pretty good about the kind of broad participation, lots of folks being able to express opinions. The survey was self-selected, those who volunteered to participate online, so it is not a statistically significant survey, but it does provide a good, pretty robust qualitative snapshot of a large number of opinions and preferences. And just to kind of give you a feel for who all participated, that sort of pie chart you see there, a little over, close to 60% of the respondents came from the neighborhoods of Houghton, Everest, Moss Bay, and Lakeview, and about 15% from really all other neighborhoods in the city. This was shown as a voluntary question, an optional question, so a lot of people chose not to respond to it, so we had about 25% that didn't respond. Just to touch on the preferences that people expressed for the Neighborhood Center, I think there was a fairly clear statement of preference for relatively small-scale development, lots of interest in retail, restaurant, and other types of commercial uses, as opposed to office or residential development in the center. And then interest and support for public amenities, and those are things like widened sidewalks, ample landscaping, public plazas, cafe seating outside restaurants, that sort of thing. So that is kind of the big picture of what people wanted to see in the neighborhood center. And we came back and addressed some of this at the community workshop, so I'll touch on this again. And then for 6th Street Corridor, I think one of the major findings there is that there just is a very broad concern over PM peak congestion along the 6th Street Corridor. So there's a lot of concern about it. I'd say there's a pretty diverse mix of opinion about what should be done about it. I think there, in the survey you'll see, when you see the kind of the bar charts, there's a fair number of people who are very opposed to any kind of widening, either at pinch points or more generally, and a fair number of people who support that. There's a number of people who see transit as probably the best solution, but those who responded to the survey didn't see themselves as being likely to use transit in the future. So there's just sort of a diverse set of opinions that don't really point to any particular solution. There is, I would say, from the survey, general interest and support for pedestrian and bicycle improvements. So more connectivity for pedestrians and bicycles in the neighborhood center and along the corridor, safe crossings, safe places to walk and places to ride your bike along the corridor. So those are kind of the big picture findings. And again, you'll get a report that gives you a much more detailed discussion of all of the findings shortly. On November 2nd, we had a community workshop that I think many of you were able to attend. And again, the purposes here were to share some of the information that had been gathered so far on the survey, as well as some work that the consultant team has been doing on the neighborhood center, land use and market feasibility information, and transportation issues related to the corridor. And then there was an opportunity to talk about some key questions and issues and report back, which let us kind of see where are people in agreement and where is there some need for further work. And again, we had, I would say, really good participation for a community event. We had about 81 participants sign in. We started at 6 o'clock with an open house, and you see some of the boards there posted around the room. We spent the first hour or so just talking to people about some of the specific information that was on the board and answering questions. And then we had presentations on the survey, on the neighborhood center land use and market information, and on the 6th Street corridor. We also had some instant polling questions that replicated some of the questions in the survey just to kind of get a feel for who was in the room. And then we spent some time in small group discussions, and this was really the time for people to give us feedback on some specific questions related to both the neighborhood center and the 6th Street corridor. So for the neighborhood center, we asked some questions about what are the benefits and risks of maintaining existing zoning and development standards versus increasing opportunities for infill and redevelopment. That was sort of one topic area. And then a second topic area was around design guidelines and what the participants felt would be, whether the participants felt that design guidelines would be useful in helping achieve a high quality community character in the Houghton Everest Neighborhood Center. So in response to those questions, these were some areas that I think were where there was, again, a fair amount of agreement. And some of the points you'll see up here are pretty similar to what we saw in the survey. So keeping the character and mix of uses somewhat consistent with what is there, supporting more retail and restaurants, and support for design guidelines. There's also I would say, fairly clear support for pedestrian-oriented design, which you know, is typically thought of as pulling the development up to the curb. But again, I think that also relates to just pedestrian being able to move around in the center. There were some areas of just questions and concerns, and those first two bullets there really relate to traffic and just recognizing there's a lot of congestion, there's safety issues, and there's parking issues, and people wanting a better understanding of what does it mean to have more development in this center, what will that really do as far as traffic congestion and safety and parking and impacts in the neighborhood. So some concern and questions around that topic. And it also, I think, some just uncertainty about getting a better handle on what are we actually talking about in terms of building design? What does it mean for building heights? I think Lisa McConnell brought up the issue of step backs. I think that's a really good point of wanting people wanting some more information about what some of the design guidelines can do and how that will reflect in terms of how buildings are developed in the neighborhood center. So those are sort of some outstanding questions that I think we'd like to try and address in the future. And then, again, there were some obvious and clear differences of opinion. There were some folks who felt that development of either 3 to 5 stories could be appropriate in some locations in the neighborhood center, and there were others who felt very strongly that it was just not appropriate at any location. There was questions about building setbacks, and this is differs from step backs, which are upper level moving back, and setbacks are, this is the idea of having the building right on the back edge of the sidewalk. So there was some, I think, debate about that. And then there was some just general concern about, well, if we don't do anything, will kind of the retail services and amenities that we have right now, will those decline over the long run so that we're sort of in a place that we don't want to be in 10 or 15 years? With respect to the 6th Street corridor, we asked questions about, we asked the participants to select a statement that they think most reflects what they think the corridor should be doing in the future, sort of the primary purpose of the corridor. And then we asked about what kind of changes or investments would you like to see in the corridor, and what ideas do you like and dislike of what's being expressed. So areas of agreement, that statement that people ranked most highly was that the purpose of the corridor should be to move people efficiently as opposed to vehicles efficiently through the corridor, so sort of maximizing the people capacity of the corridor. I think there was a general recognition that there is really limited opportunities right now to add capacity to the corridor as a method to reduce congestion, so that may not be really a feasible or optimal idea, and that transit, again, is probably the best and easiest way for increasing the number or the amount of people movement capacity within the corridor. And then a recognition that access management, which is really looking at driveways and how they serve the properties and how they're spaced, would also help improve safety and connectivity for both vehicles and for bicycles and pedestrians. And I think, again, this discussion sort of mirrored the survey in that I think there's general agreement and understanding of what the challenges are, but when it gets to kind of trying to figure out what are the specific actions that could be taken or should be taken, there's lots of different ideas, and they vary quite a bit. So there, you'll see in your notes, you probably already have seen, there's lots of different ideas for transit improvements. There's lots of different thoughts on bicycle and pedestrian improvements. Parking continues to be a concern. Heard that already expressed. And safety is also a concern for, particularly for non-motorized circulation. And then there's sort of that longer view picture of transportation technology is changing, demographics are changing, and we need to make sure that we're planning for those, that sort of long-range future change, and not just what we see right now in front of us. So those are kind of just the very high-level outcomes of the both the workshop and the survey. And I wanted to switch gears right now and talk a little bit about this redevelopment continuum that Angela mentioned. We introduced this at the community workshop, and the idea was to say on a continuum, there's sort of three scenarios that you could sort of be talking about. One is preservation, which is preserving the current height limit of 30 feet in the neighborhood center, which is about a two-story development. There's a scenario that looks at what happens if you increase height modestly, so another 5 feet or so to allow three stories, or what if there is a more significant change, allowing up to 4 to 5 stories. And this continuum is intended to show, okay, here's kind of what that might mean in terms of building height as far as public improvements, transportation improvements. Here's kind of what that might mean at different points along the continuum. And then if you look at the outcomes down below, sort of likely future scenarios. So under preservation, you see maintain existing development pattern, which means maintaining the surface parking, and probably relatively limited amount of redevelopment. Under the modest change, there might be some minor infill. Surface parking is likely to remain, but there could be some improvements to the public realm. So the open space, the idea of the sidewalk improvements, pedestrian improvements that people are interested in. And then moving on up to the larger development scale, that there's likely to be more significant infill. There's potential for structured parking as opposed to surface parking. And there's potential for increased levels of improvement to the public realm. And so this is a framework that we've been trying to work within. And Jeff is going to talk a little bit more about that. Jeff, where are you?
Just for the record, Jeff, why don't you give your full name and who you're with?
Okay. Let me just get this up here. All right. Good evening. My name is Jeff Arango. I'm an urban planner with Burke and part of the consultant team working on this project. We're on the team to help with urban design and looking at the market feasibility of the different scenarios that Deborah just walked through. I'll go back to the development continuum in a minute, but I'd like to just walk through some of the highlights of the presentation that I gave at the last workshop, and then be happy to answer any questions you might have. So this first one just shows the boundary of the neighborhood center. For those that may not be completely familiar with the boundaries, includes the primarily the commercial area and the multifamily properties along the edges. And it's about 20 acres in size. One of the things that we've done as part of the project is what we're calling the physical condition assessment. So it's kind of looking at the existing physical makeup of the urban center. And this diagram here shows the relationship between surface parking lots, buildings, and green space. And as you can see, the area in gray highlights surface parking. And so most of the land right now is being used for storing vehicles for those coming to shop or work at these locations. The landscape areas you see in green are primarily small landscape strips, not really usable space other than the CKC, which is on the left-hand side of the diagram. There's about 650 parking spaces in the neighborhood center right now, and most of the buildings you see in white are 1 to 2 stories. There is one three-story building, and there's only been 2 buildings built in the neighborhood center since 1990, so there hasn't been much development in the neighborhood center, despite the 2 real estate booms we experienced over the last 15 years. And so that's kind of the basis for the preservation scenario. You know, some of the proof is in the last several years where, despite all the real estate activity that's been happening, not much has happened in the Houghton Center. We also took a look at some of the streetscapes. Probably these images are familiar to you, but on the left-hand side is 68th Street. And the right-hand side is 6th Street. And much like the private development, the streets are really designed for automobile traffic. There are, you know, sidewalk facilities and bike lanes, but I would not describe them as particularly pedestrian-friendly. There's not much of a buffer between the sidewalks and the traffic other than the bike lanes. There's no on-street parking. The sidewalks are fronted primarily by those narrow green strips and surface parking lots. There are 22 curb cuts along those streets just within that neighborhood center boundary, and what that does is creates potential for pedestrian and vehicular conflicts. So it's not a particularly pedestrian-friendly area to be, and that, I think, reflects the overall character of the neighborhood center as it is today. This is a map of the parcels, and they don't follow exactly how development occurs, but that's actually the parcel boundaries. The parcels highlighted in blue are those that were identified in the comprehensive plan update as being more likely to redevelop, and that's determined based on the value of improvements, so parking, buildings, other things that were developed on the site, to the value of the land. And if it's less than 50%, if the improvements are less than 50% of the value of land, it's a common metric to assess the likelihood that those properties will redevelop. So those are the properties identified in blue, and it's approximately 6 acres of land. As you know, the Central Houghton Neighborhood Plan has several policies that talk about the neighborhood center, and this is what we used in part to develop the scenarios, and I think it's pretty specific in terms of the outcomes it's looking for. If you look at goal CH7, it says support the transition, so that means change of Houghton Center into a pedestrian-oriented mixed-use development, including retail with office and residential or other compatible uses. And I think from our standpoint, working on this project, if we knew that that was really the desired outcome, I think we could provide some more specificity on some of the alternatives. But, you know, currently the community, I think, is still debating what they would really like the outcome to be. So we're still kind of working through that. And as we do that, we can refine those scenarios and what some of the additional details are of how those would work. But it does talk a lot about pedestrian-oriented development. It does talk about 5 stories with upper-level setbacks, providing gathering spaces, relaxation areas, a lot of things that don't exist there today that would require redevelopment, both of private properties and of public streets in the area for these changes to occur. Another concept I'll touch on briefly, which we described at the public workshop, the concept of residual land value. It's used to assess, the likelihood of redevelopment. And essentially what it does is looks at the amount of land value that a development could pay for based on the development value, so how valuable that development is, minus the cost of that development, including profit. And so it's a way to basically show if development is feasible. A couple things to note: current landowners have a little bit more option in terms of what they could develop or make work because they paid lower costs for the land, so they have a little bit more flexibility. And higher land values require more valuable development for that to pay off. Right now in the current market, you know, rents are very high, so that makes development more feasible, but construction costs are also very high and continuing to escalate. So a couple things to keep in mind there. We're going to be releasing a more detailed written report on all of this probably in the next week or so. So there'll be some more information in there on this analysis. So the three scenarios that we've developed, again, the preservation scenario is existing zoning. The modest change scenario would allow up to 35-foot building heights to allow for three stories. Current zoning is 30-foot height limit, which really doesn't allow three stories given the first floor requirements for retail. And then on the right-hand side is the greater change in amenity scenario, which would allow, again, up to four or five stories. Looking at the preservation scenario, we use the Houghton Plaza development on the corner of 6th and 68th Street. It's where the Menchie's is. Just to look at sort of what would redevelopment under existing zoning look like. Right now there's about 14,000 square foot of retail and 33 parking stalls. It's about an acre in size. One thing to note is the parking the parking on site currently is less than what would be required under existing zoning. So if they were to redevelop that, they'd actually have to provide more parking than is there today. And so these three diagrams show three potential scenarios for redevelopment. The first one is really just looking at if you took the existing building and reoriented it towards the street, because right now under current zoning, new development would have to put the parking behind the building and the building up to the street, which makes a big difference in terms of pedestrian orientation and might, you know, bring about some of those changes that were mentioned in the Houghton, Central Houghton Plan goals. But the problem with that is you essentially end up with more parking and a smaller building, and there isn't really a whole lot of incentive for someone to do something like that. For the two-story scenario, you get a little bit more square footage because now you have two stories. You get more surface parking because the additional square footage requires more parking. And now you only have one story of retail you have about half as much retail as you do currently because that upper story would not support retail use. Similarly, on the three-story building, the footprint gets smaller, you get more square footage, you get larger surface parking lots. So we seem to be kind of moving further away from what the community wants under this scenario, which is less surface parking and more retail. So that's kind of the preservation scenario. And I'd also like to note that the three-story option really is not feasible, but we included it anyways for illustration purposes. So this is just a summary of those three scenarios. You can see at the table on the bottom the square footages that you get, the amount of parking stalls that would be required, and the parking area. And I can't emphasize enough how much the parking requirements, particularly when you start looking at structured parking, really impact the feasibility of that development. I know the city's reduced some of those requirements for residential development, and that will help. But just something to keep in mind, it is a really big factor. And for the three-story scenario, you know, we're not looking at really at structured parking. That's not to say no one's ever built a three-story building with structured parking, but it's much, much less likely to occur for a couple of reasons. One is that the first floor is typically the most expensive to build. So if the community wants to maintain its retail base in the Houghton Center, you need additional development to offset those costs. As someone mentioned earlier, the cost of underground structured parking, $35,000-$40,000 a stall, and there just isn't the economies of scale to really make that development likely to happen. And I think we've heard that from some of the property owners and developers that currently own property in the Houghton Center. So I think I already touched on this, but this is now the three-story scenario. Go back there. So I think I did touch on this. Redevelopment is a little more likely at 35 feet. Not to say that no one would ever build a three-story building with structured parking. There's just one built recently in my neighborhood in Queen Anne. But it's really pretty unlikely. It would likely to maintain surface parking lots, but it would also require improvements to streets and public spaces in order to make the area more pedestrian friendly and meet some of those goals that are in the Central Houghton plan. The 4 to 5 story height limit starts to look much more attractive than the 3 story scenario. Lots of 5 story buildings in downtown Kirkland as one example, but again, you start to get the economies of scale to be able to support structured parking below grade where it's out of sight. You can support more retail. You have more upper stories to offset the first floor cost for the commercial space, and it, of course, would require also improvements to streets and public spaces to support new development. You're not going to develop, more urban mixed-use buildings fronting on streets with no parking and narrow sidewalks and lots of curb cuts. So there would have to be some changes to streets and public spaces to make that work. So back to the redevelopment continuum, and I think Deborah described it well. Rather than think of this sort of in absolutes, we like to think about what's more likely or less likely to occur and really tie that back to what the community's desired outcome is. If those items listed in the Central Houghton Neighborhood Plan really are the most important things to the community, like adding retail and public spaces and affordable housing, then probably the scenarios on more on the right side of the diagram are going to make more sense. But if the primary goal of the community is to kind of keep what you have and, not really support much change, then probably the existing zoning and development standards that are in place now are pretty much effectively doing that. So I think it really comes down to what the community wants, what their values are, and then I do think there is more discussion around what some of the trade-offs are or how you might be able to mitigate some of the impacts of more denser development. Some examples we've been giving some thought to would be to restrict taller buildings just to certain properties. You wouldn't necessarily have to allow it throughout the entire site. There could be a height limit of 3 stories or something lower along the main arterials, so along 68th, 6th Street and 108th. There could, say, be a 50-foot zone, for example, off of the street where lower heights would be in place and taller buildings would be allowed outside of that zone. There could be a reduction of the 20-yard front setback in exchange for property owners providing some additional right-of-way to add wider sidewalks, on-street parking, and some of the public space amenities that the public desires. There could be incentives, increased density or building height for providing and improving public spaces. There could be design review and standards to minimize impacts from taller buildings casting shadows on public spaces. Mercer Island just went through a long process in their town center to put in new standards that deal with daylight requirements and building modulation. There could be a height bonus permitted if there's a first floor grocery store. So we heard from PCC and their interest in redevelopment, but if there are certain amenities or uses the community really wants to incentivize, that could be put in place. The other thing is adding public parking really starts to make some of the more lower scale scenarios start to look better. As Mr. Markle said, their site and many of the other sites are all built out with parking. If there was some public parking provided, that might take some of the burden off them. It might allow some smaller scale infill to occur. Probably not extremely likely, but parking is a really big factor. So those were just, some of the concepts we've been playing around with, but we do think it's important to start thinking about what some of those other design options may be. So thank you.
Is this an opportunity for us to ask some questions?
Sure.
Okay. Betsy?
You brought up some, I think, some really interesting things at the end that I'd like to know more about. Are you going to be presenting a lot more detail about things like the Mercer Island plan and, because these are things that...
Yeah.
Yeah, these are the kinds of ideas that we, I think, are longing to hear is how do we mitigate things? How do we make a beautiful space that gives everybody kind of what they want? And it sounds like you had some good ideas.
Yes, we are planning on doing that. I believe on the 15th of December, we're going to be here for a workshop before before a meeting, and we could present some of that information at that time. And we certainly plan on doing that. We tend not to bring that stuff to our first meeting because it's more about getting input from the community and kind of learning what the issues are. But absolutely, we are planning on doing that.
Great, thank you. Yeah. And some if you can show us examples of places where that's worked, that'd be super. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you.
Yes.
Questions that I wanted to ask is what's in the Houghton Center from east to west, what's the difference in grade? Because that would be interesting information. Other parts of the city will allow taller building heights where a major grade difference makes, preserves view corridors and prevents the visual massing because you can work with the grade. So that would be an interesting bit of information to talk about. I also had a comment about all your curb cuts. I worked in the late 90s. I worked on the Northeast 85th Corridor study. And finally, 16 years later, 17 years later, everything's been implemented. And the reduction of curb cuts along 85th has actually made a difference in how traffic flows along that corridor. Yeah. And it prevents people from stopping every 100 feet to make a turn, then traffic backs up behind them while maybe there's one car exiting that's too wide and they can't make the turn. They've got to wait for that car to clear. It's actually made, I've lived on Rose Hill more than five decades, so I understand the changes that have happened there. So I just wanted to say that's made a huge difference. And I don't think there's going to be any one solution that's going to, it's going to be a whole bunch of different things. An increase in the diversity of housing stock, changes in some of the public infrastructure, I think there was one comment that I was confused about under the 6th Street corridor. Someone mentioned that improved pedestrian and bicycle access to the Houghton Park and Ride, but yet further in the tables, did you mean is South Kirkland meant? Because the Houghton Park and Ride is actually on 116th and 70th. So that actually needs some clarification. Is that correct? Or I'm just trying to understand what we're talking about.
That was actually a comment that was made by a citizen at the workshop, and I'm not sure. I believe they did say the Houghton
I was Park and Ride. Sitting next to her. It was the Houghton Park and Ride that she was referring to.
Okay.
So.
And then I just had one more comment. Sorry. Well, I'll keep looking for it.
Okay. Who else has questions? John.
Angela, at the beginning of the presentation, I thought I heard you say that the goal was for not a lot of offices and not a lot of housing, that it was for generally more retail. Did I hear that right? I'm just...
I didn't say that.
Not your goal, but a consensus of
I know. I'm just trying to think. Was it maybe when Deborah was talking about what
I might have said that
was in the survey? Okay. Yeah.
I guess that goes to the question because I'm reading in the report a couple times where it says promoting a mix of uses, and then it's a conflict that some don't want housing, and so I'm a little confused as to the consensus of what the workshop actually came to.
I'm not sure that the workshop came to a clear consensus on that. The survey certainly had a pretty clear response, rating just retail, restaurant, and other kinds of commercial more highly than housing or office development. Okay. I'm not sure that there was that kind of a consensus at the workshop.
And that was on page, I think, 11 was the little bar graph. Was it that one that I saw that...
Yeah, there was a couple of, I don't have the packet right in front of me. There was a couple of bar graphs from the survey that show retail and commercial being rated more highly. Okay. One was under future development patterns, and one was under future land use, I think.
Okay. So, and page 11 was the instant polling. Is that what you're talking about?
Right. No, that is, I misquoted. This shouldn't be page 11. It should be in the data a little deeper. Okay, I was just a little confused as I read some of this. It says, because it says promote a mix of uses, and I don't know if it meant a total mixed use or really was more of a mix of retail.
Yeah, a lot of the bullets that are in there from the community workshop are pretty much verbatim from what we got from the small groups. And so some of it probably does conflict with each other.
Okay.
Yeah. It's just people's responses that night.
Here. Okay. Yeah. Okay, thanks.
Rick, can I ask a question?
Of course. Elsie?
Speak into the mic.
When I was reading the survey results, I noticed that there was a high interest in keeping the grocery store and the drugstore, but I didn't hear you mention that tonight.
Yeah, that's true. I that's correct. I didn't mention everything from the survey, but retail and restaurant certainly is part of that.
Other questions? Colleen, did you figure out what it was?
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
Thank you so much. For your this, I like that this redevelopment continuum, I think, is a really useful visual illustration. And one of the things that I wanted was another continuum that illustrated what the neighborhood values to compare and contrast, like as a way of showing where what the community values overlaps with this redevelopment continuum. I have an inkling of how you might do that, and then also it would also illustrate gaps, meaning you know what trade-offs were made and how those what trade-offs are made, let's say, to get greatest level of public improvement, you know, to the public realm, and then compare it against what the community values. Mm-hmm. And I think that'd be a really, really, really excellent visual representation kind of at what's in play. So just a suggestion.
Okay, well, we'll give that some more thought. That's a really good comment. I think we tried to get that at that a little bit with the outcomes piece, but I think we could add.
You did, but I think a visual really for because these are very abstract ideas, and they're based on. This is something I struggle with as a planning commission member. We have to make decisions without really any data. We have to say what's the trajectory of the city as a whole 20 years from now, and. We may have data on what exists today, let's say around a particular zone and what its geography is, but we couldn't have, in 1980, when they were buying up the lakefront, we didn't know that Google was going to be here with a big campus, right? I mean, I'm just saying that's the struggle.
Yeah, sure. Appreciate that. We'll give it some more thought.
That's a really big struggle when it comes to transportation and the 6th Street corridor. And in as part of that, I just wanted to mention that we are working, we've talked mostly tonight about the neighborhood center, but we are working really in pretty close partnership with Transpo, Jeannie Akitanza, who's here tonight, to talk about development and what does that mean for the transportation on the corridor. So there's a little bit of back and forthing going on in those two parts of the project. And Jeannie is here if you wanted to ask any questions about sort of the corridor as it relates to the Neighborhood Center tonight as well.
I want to piggyback on Colleen's before we leave that topic. And I think that what probably the majority of citizens would like to see on this development continuum is a line for public impacts, and specifically traffic. I mean, that's really what the majority of concern has been, is focused on the traffic. And so what I'd like to see is some sort of an objective projection of traffic impact at various levels of redevelopment. And I understand you may not be able to nail it, but maybe you can give us a range and maybe some options on how to reduce the impacts within each of those redevelopment scenarios. But I think that's crucial. You've got to tie that in an objective way, because everybody's afraid that this is going to make what's already a really bad situation untenable. And realistically, if the impact is going to be a 1% increase in traffic with significant redevelopment, well, that's a whole lot different than a 20% increase in traffic. And we need to get some sort of objective comparison to get so people can really see it and not just look at it emotionally.
Yeah. Totally. So. that totally makes sense. And I just want to mention, I think that, Jeannie, tell me if I'm wrong, that by the meeting on the 15th, we should have some good ballpark measures
okay.
for you on the three.
Excellent.
Is
Matthew?
That true? Okay. Yes.
I would piggyback on that, and I would also agree with all of Colleen's comments. To me, that's the missing piece in this is everybody assumes development, more traffic. What does that actually mean? Is there an actual metric that can be attached to that that is usable? The second thing is that some of these, when you go to these workshops, and I apologize I was unable to make this particular workshop, is that everybody states what they want, but there's really no comparison of, well, if you get this, this is what that means. Does that make sense? And I don't know if there was that at this workshop, but what I hear the crux of the problem is here is that this is a community that may want some new amenities, but they may not want the development that they need in order to have those amenities. So what do they value more or less? Does that make sense?
I think that's a fair question.
Other questions? Oh, Colleen, back
sorry,
for another.
Keep,
that's
sorry
okay.
to keep, this is just a short one. I appreciated your comments about potential mitigations, mm-hmm. and I wanted to suggest another one to add sure. to the list for parking. I work for AT&T, and we have a huge bunch of real estate in Bothell. And when we didn't have enough parking in our particular office park, we would mm-hmm. go to our neighbors, totally different companies, not part of AT&T, who parking was underutilized, and lease their parking spaces from them for a nominal fee. And there is a church on the other side of the fire station mm-hmm. where there are certain hours when their parking lot is large and it's empty. Maybe some kind of partnership between the church and Met Market could resolve some of the parking issues where they provided like 12 spaces that they paid a nominal fee to the church for, and their employees could walk there and walk back, you know, along sidewalks and in front of the fire station or whatever. That doesn't, maybe things like that could be worked out where mm-hmm. That could help. That could be another way without having to invest in additional, you know, paved surfaces.
Yeah, that's a great comment. Little bit about me. I actually spent half of my time doing parking studies, so you're actually kind of preaching to the choir on that one. But I think that is something that could be looked at. Jeannie and Transpo did do some preliminary parking counts and did show there could be some capacity to do that. But that is one of the reasons why public parking is so efficient, is it's available to everyone, and you can park once and walk to other locations. But there are other communities that have done things, like, again, in Mercer Island, they have a requirement where actually if you go to a business in downtown and at least – or park at a business in downtown and at least go into the store or whatever, you're allowed to park there for 2 hours and go to other locations around the downtown. So I certainly will add that to my list. Thanks.
Other questions? Yes, Brian.
Also, just real quickly, I apologize. I wasn't able to be at the workshop due to my middle son's fourth birthday, so that took precedence. But there's also a piece of land behind the gas station there that's pretty much on you. I mean, everybody loves the taco guy there, but it's undeveloped, and I wondered if that was considered in the study.
Where the taco truck
is? It's within the business district.
Yeah.
It's
part of it.
It's within it. Yeah.
For parking, more specifically.
Not for parking, no, but it could be a site for public parking potentially.
Okay, any other questions? I've got a couple others I'd like to add. Has there been any analysis of the variation in the survey results or responses between people who are residents of Houghton Everest versus outside?
Yeah, we did break that out. I don't have that with me, but we can provide that for you.
I would like to see that. Was there much of a difference?
You know, I don't recall. I remember looking at the Moss Bay one and thinking there was some difference with Moss Bay, and I don't recall that there was with the Central Houghton neighborhood, but we'll definitely get it to you.
Please, yeah. Okay. And the other thing I was wondering is, I've heard from many residents who are kind of confused and uncertain about the process, not like even tonight they're saying they're not sure what questions they're asked, and you know, and so do you feel like you have already received enough input from the neighborhood to really come up with some scenarios and recommendations, or is there more to, that you could or should do? And specifically, I know that there's been, I've heard interest from both sides of the aisle, both the neighbors and developers and property owners, that they would like to see more interaction directly between them, because I think that is really a positive, constructive thing, and then we can learn a lot from that. But I don't see that as part of the process. What I see is you're going to report to us on the 15th, and then we're going to have just some sort of a hearing in January.
Yeah.
But that's just people getting up and speaking there or saying what they have to say rather than getting direct communication.
I was just going to say we were planning on the 15th and also before the January meeting to have an hour before the meeting that would be more open to questions. And I'm not sure I know exactly. I mean, you're saying maybe have property owners and residents be able to talk. Yeah. I'm sure they could talk during that time. So that may not address everything you're talking about, but that's one way that we were going to try to do that.
I think the more that you can get that interaction, the better.
I just want to add, too, I think the representatives of Metro Market and PCC have reached out to several neighborhoods and several neighbors and groups and talked to them as well individually. So that's going on.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Good. But back to my question, do you feel like you've gotten
I'll take a shot. I think that we have kind of just started to scratch the surface, and we do. One of the things that we heard at the community workshop was, "Nice start. Glad you've introduced some of these issues, but we have some questions." And I think that's one of the things that we'd like to use that 6 o'clock hour before the Planning Commission meetings is to come back and say, "Here's some questions you had. Transportation was one of them. You guys have raised it. It was raised by the public. Design standards. What is a five-story building with step backs actually look like? You know, can you show us some examples?" I think those are the kinds of things that we'd want to come back with to share the information that we've got and then hear some feedback, still more on that from the public.
So we should really be promoting that to both the property owners and the neighborhood residents to try to encourage them to get there early for that opportunity.
Yeah.
Glenn?
Two things. As long as you mentioned that, I've noticed you really have to promote that because we get some interest at those 6 o'clock sessions, but usually we don't see a lot, you know, of people there. I had a different question here about the 6th Street corridor. I thought it was curious that people boasted that a bunch of people agreed there were too many transit stops in the area. Yeah. What was that? I mean, too many places marked off for bus stops?
I think it was that the spacing was too close together. Too many stops. I guess traffic congestion. Is that the... Yeah, traffic
But anyway, congestion. I thought it was interesting that after that, these can be different things, but then it says, prefer more frequent bus service at the same time, which
so we're saying there's
they aren't necessarily contradictory, but they...
Yeah.
You know.
Yes.
Right. Any other? Yes. Go ahead, Elsie.
Do you foresee this being a blanket one type zoning thing? I foresee that between 106th and the corridor could be maybe 5-story area, and then across the street, crossing 68th over where PCC is, that there could be a section maybe that would be high enough. And then you're looking at the service station, and I just don't see one blanket type thing.
I would say that's correct. I mean, right now there are, I think, 3 different zoning districts, but as I alluded to earlier, there's lots of other options for allowing height in specific locations, doing something what's called a form-based code, which actually gets really specific in terms of where height is allowed or not allowed, specific build to or setback lines. So, yes, we consider all of those as options.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'm just trying not to be too confused.
Betsy?
Well, I just want to chime in because I was part of that central neighborhood planning session years ago. A lot of people that are in this room now. And, you know, the original vision, that's why we did what we did, was we said, we want to look at this area as a whole so that it is planned comprehensively so that we do not look like downtown Redmond. We do, you know, we specifically did not want to see, oh, here's single family housing. Oh, it's all five story now and it's all straight across and then it comes down. And, you know, so, you know, a mix of heights, a mix of uses, a mix of building styles. Let's keep it livable, you know. And so that's where the one of the things I've seen lacking, and I mentioned this to Marilyn Beard last year when we were first talking about this, is it would be nice if the community could bring to you some of examples that they have seen in other cities or in other countries. You know, I mean, we keep getting, it feels a little one-sided, like people are saying, well, do you like this? Do you like this? It's like, well, let me show you what I like. Let us bring you some examples. And that is something that has been lacking, I think, from this process. I mean, I think we just, you know, it's like the multiple choice questions, you know, okay, but all the questions that didn't get asked and all the things that, you know, so anyway, that's what I'm still hoping to see in this process, is more heads just coming together over a table, pouring over great examples. Like you talked about, you know, some cool mitigation things. I'd love to see some of that stuff and really have some in-depth conversations how that would work in our neighborhood, because there's a lot of potential here, but there's also a lot of downside if we do it wrong. So that's what I'm thinking.
John?
So there's been an awful lot of study and surveys and outreach on this that have been, I think, very high-level and big global idea thoughts. Would you please talk a little bit about now how you're going to take this information to come up with some specific suggestions, goals, what specific code recommendations that you might have, what specific design review regulations that all this is going to result in to help us to get to some sort of decision? Would you talk about that process, please, that you're going to go through?
Sure. Well, I think as we mentioned earlier, first we need to develop what those options are, and I alluded to some of those earlier. We're going to, again, have the committee meetings upcoming and the open houses to get feedback. We're going to produce materials for the website, which we can also get feedback from. I know that the staff is constantly meeting and getting input from stakeholders. And I'd say that's primarily the way that we'll continue to get feedback and work with the committee and the commission to come up with some refinements to that and find out where there's some support for some specific scenarios. I think we didn't get to that point at the first workshop, and I think that's fairly typical, but we hope to through the process leading up to the hearing.
Okay.
I think...
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think that to get to the question about how specifically are we going to get to those answers, is that we are going to develop these scenarios a little bit more fully, particularly the 3 and the 5 story options, just to understand what those could look like. So what do step backs look like under those two options? What's the development feasibility? What is the traffic implications? And what are some options for more specific zoning code or development standards or guidelines? And we're not going to fully develop any of them, but we're going to bring them back to you that way. We're going to ask for feedback at these open house workshops and on the web that way. And then we can take it the next step further when we can start to see where there is some agreement. We're going to try and sort of, I guess, do it very stepwise.
How many people are on the listserv for this?
Do you know?
Roughly. I'm just curious.
I'd say 200.
Okay. So most neighborhood residents who are interested would probably be, they're going to be able to be tracking what's happening as we, okay, great.
Yes.
Okay. Any other questions? Excellent. Thank you, guys.
Yes.
Sorry, Eric.
Will we have before this next we're not calling it a workshop, open house, will the scenarios be ready by then?
Oh, yeah.
So people who show up to that will have the opportunity to provide feedback on specific scenarios. Great.
And my only thing, as I said earlier, please, I encourage you to do everything you can to try to get people out as early as possible, you know, 6 o'clock. You know, do what you can to encourage that for the
I think just in response, so that next meeting is December 15th, so that's very soon. We'll have the scenarios. We're not going to have, I don't know how much detail. I mean, this will be a step process.
Yeah.
So what we wanted was some guidance from you tonight. If you thought that those three scenarios were what we should be looking at, it sounds like you do. You'd like more information, and that'll be our next step, is to bring you more information and to that 6 to 7 o'clock time also.
Okay. Thank you.
Sorry, just one more question and maybe a comment to follow up on that. Are we operating on any sort of deadline prescribed by council? We are. Okay, I thought so. And that's why, my comment would be I am a little worried that this is so compressed, particularly around the holiday season. And I thought the workshop was excellent. I thought the feedback that we got from the community was excellent. Mm-hmm. I worry that if we're only having what I'm seeing is one more open house, that likely will not be sufficient for the community to feel involved and to be involved.
So if I may, I share your worry. And I think that all of you, I suggest you keep that in mind. Maybe at the next meeting, let's ask ourselves where we're at. And because if we need to go to the city council and ask for more time, I think it would be helpful for you to do that as opposed to the staff doing that by themselves.
I've already done it. I've already had that conversation with the mayor and deputy mayor, and they're open to it if it's necessary. They want to make sure the process is given adequate time to work through. So, yeah.
And we are planning to report to them at a study session on the 17th of January, so that would be a good time if we're feeling that need to do that.
Okay.
Well, when is our deadline? I was thinking it was the 31st. Is it March, though? Is it... When is our deadline now?
Oh, yeah, I think it's... Now I'm forgetting if it's the end of... I think it's the end of February.
I thought it was the end of January.
Our final recommendation is due January 31st.
Right. Okay. Yeah. 17th might be a little late to me.
Yeah, but then we go on to say that after that January 26th meeting, we'll determine if we need to continue the need additional time. So, yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, we'll do what we need to do to make sure that the process is given adequate.
I think it'd be nice to have a heads up if we're going to need additional time before that date.
Why we will be talking about it in, is that, 2 weeks? Yeah. We can talk about it at the December 15th meeting.
Right. Okay.
But tentatively, what date is it in January?
LC,
we don't know yet?
Just
okay.
Go with it. Okay. Thank you very much. So, next item on our agenda is... brief staff presentation on the City Council's action on the low-impact development zoning code amendment.
Yeah, I got it, but I didn't know which date.
I think we're waiting for our staff people to come in, so give us a couple minutes.
Sure.
Well, that would be December. That's City Council.
Okay.
Yeah. Why not? Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So are you going to be our new designated?
It's like a requirement. We're not still recording.
Better turn it.
We're recording. Yeah, Rick, we're recording. Okay.
I don't know. I don't have anything else to say.
Hi. I didn't even make copies this time.
Yeah, I mean, I said I could run away. Oh,
I forgot. We normally do that.
Okay, are we ready?
Oh, well, just...
Excuse me,
Rick.
We have a meeting.
Yeah.
Sorry, we gotta keep meeting.
Yeah, we're still. The meeting's in progress. Let's go.
We'll do it, lady.
Okay, I'm not calling the meeting back to order because the meeting has not just. Okay, right. Let's move on. Paul, okay. Ready?
Well, just to set the stage here, as you may recall,
Rick, are you gonna let these guys go?
No, we're still meeting with the Planning Commission. Can we please have some order in the room? We're continuing the meeting. Thank you.
We brought forward the low-impact development code amendments to both the Planning Commission and the Hilton Community Council at a joint meeting. There was a difference of opinion on the recommendation to the City Council. The City Council took up the ordinance last month and did not come to a consensus. So we actually presented some additional information to the City Council regarding the potential changes as a result of those exceptions we talked at length about that evening, and gave some examples of how that might play out. We provided that to the Hilton Community Council tonight as part of their meeting that would come after the Planning Commission adjourned. But there was some sense from the chair and the vice chair that they wanted the Planning Commission to hear what the proposed changes could be, and there were some options we prepared for the Hilton Community Council. And one possible option is to separate out the ordinances so that they can take action on the final ordinance and then consider the exceptions at a later date. But there was some, I believe, interest on the part of the Community Council to have a discussion with the Planning Commission. It's kind of up to the Planning Commission whether you want to consider that or not. If not, you can go forward with your recommendation. Or if you do, we can discuss what we talked about with the City Council, and you can weigh in on that after that discussion. And then the Community Council will then take their take the issue under their advisement and make either recommendation to the City Council again or take no action further on the matter. Right. So do you want to hear a brief staff report on what?
Well, yeah, because other than Eric, I think the rest of the Planning Commission wasn't aware of what transpired at the City Council meeting, and so I think you should give them just a brief overview. And then if at that point they don't care to consider it any further, that's fine. We're just looking. We're going to be taking it up, and if you guys have any comments that you want to add to our deliberations, we're open to it.
Well, I guess before we have the staff presentation, I just want to make sure everyone on the commission is. So this is something I decided to add to the agenda right before the meeting tonight, just to give us the opportunity to have this discussion. Is there interest on the commission in potentially either amending our recommendation, providing additional context for the council at this point? Mr. Miller?
I think I'd like to at least hear what the
Great.
From the
yeah.
staff what the council said.
Great.
And then decide.
Great. And we'll do that. Thank you.
Okay. So as Paul mentioned, we're going to explain what happened at the council meeting, give a little bit of additional information, and then we had developed three options for the Houghton Community Council to provide direction to staff, either to retain their original recommendation or, based on some of this new information and discussion, to reconsider that and make a new recommendation, or simply to provide some clarification and additional rationale for their original recommendation. Also, as was mentioned, the council did pass the municipal code ordinance, so that piece is taken care of. And then they did not take action on the ordinance for the zoning code amendments, although they indicated support for the changes to Chapter 95, the landscaping amendments, and for the changes to Chapter 114 for low-impact development, and also for the other changes to 115. Other than this one section, 115.90.3, which had to do with calculating lot coverage. And that section is on the screen. It provides partial exemption for surfaces that provide LID benefits. And as you may recall, the Houghton Community Council's recommendation on this was to leave all of these incentives in, and the Planning Commission wanted to leave in C, which is the open grid decking incentive. So we did provide, well, this slide provides a little background just as kind of a refresher about this issue. Again, these incentives were added to the zoning code fairly recently in 2012 as part of the Green Code package of amendments. They included these new incentives to encourage the use of pervious surfaces, and the staff recommendation had been to eliminate the incentives since these use of pervious surfaces is going to be required as part of the new surface water design manual. So Jenny Gauss from Public Works is going to explain some terminology and kind of the implications of each of the recommendations.
Before you go, so why did the council, what were they all twisted around about?
Well, maybe we can get to that. They really just didn't.
Yeah, and I had some diagrams that may help that we realized it would have been nice if we had had them when we first came to you because they make things a little bit clearer. So, and as I go through those diagrams, I'll talk about hard surfaces, which are any constructed surfaces like rooftops, driveways, patios, decks, and walkways. That's not a zoning code definition. That's a term that I'm using to try to help clarify the situation, hopefully. The zoning code definition of maximum lot coverage talks about the maximum percentage of the surface of this property that can be covered with materials which will not allow for the percolation of water. And so we'll get to this, but this is sort of mixing land use, which may have things to do like open space and not open space and surface water. And part of what we are suggesting is trying to sort of separate those two things so that we aren't wrangling over them, essentially. And then pervious surfaces are hard surfaces that are currently given a partial exemption that do allow water to go through. So here's some examples of how the different recommendations would look. The staff recommendation, which was to remove all the incentives or exemptions, if you have an 8,000 square foot lot and you want to put in a 2,400 square foot house and an 800 square foot driveway and an 800 square foot deck, all of those would count at sort of full value, if you will, and you would end up with 4,000 square feet of hard surface coverage and 4,000 square feet of lot coverage, or 50% lot coverage, which is the typical that's allowed. The Planning Commission recommendation was to keep the exemption for open grid decking. So that would result in, again, using this 8,000 square foot example, you could use a 2,400 square foot house, an 800 square foot driveway, which would count as its full value. Wouldn't count. There would be no exemption for that. An 800 square foot deck would count at half of its value, and then you could potentially add an extra 400 square feet onto your house. So this could result in this particular example in 4,400 square feet of hard surface coverage, even though it's only 4,000 square feet of lot coverage. Also to point out with the Planning Commission recommendation, you're allowed to have up to 10%, the area of the exemption can be up to 10% of your lot. So in this case, it's unlikely that this would happen, but you could have up to 1,600 square feet in this 8,000 square foot example of open grid decking under the Planning Commission recommendation. Most people don't build a deck that large, so you aren't going to see that full 60% coverage with hard surfaces, which is what could potentially result from that, but that's what the code would allow. And then the Houghton Community Council recommendation is to keep all of the existing exemptions. So you could have your 2,400 square foot house, your 800 square foot driveway, and your 800 square foot deck would each count as 50%. And you could add an extra 800 square feet to your house. So that would result in 4,800 square feet of hard surfaces, which would still only count as 4,000 square feet or 50% lot coverage.
That assumes the driveway is permeable, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it would have to be put in per the Surface Water Design Manual standards.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so that's an interesting point, which is that there may be lots where you have high groundwater and other things where under the current code, use of these pervious surfaces would not be allowed for lot coverage purposes because they are not feasible from a stormwater standpoint. So. Mm-hmm. And this just shows all of the three examples kind of side by side. If you have any questions about those, I can try to answer those. And then Dorian has a few more slides, if not. So.
John, okay. Do you want to go ahead? Got a question or comment?
That's my question.
So what is the council?
It was on whether to have any exemptions or.
Right, but why couldn't they?
Well, because there's eight members there.
And it was four.
And there was concern over bonus lot coverage. Should it be restricted? Should it not be restricted? There were sort of varying thoughts on that.
There was discussions about lots and lots of issues,
we're still shaking our heads here why they can't make up their minds why us making a different recommendation makes any difference, but.
It was a split vote.
Yes, but.
One city council member agreed with the staff recommendation, two city council members agree with the planning commission recommendation, and three agree with the Houghton Community Council recommendation.
Yes. Okay. I think we understand.
What did the electoral college come up with?
Yeah. I think we understand how it occurred. I think our concern is why does our making a different recommendation change anything, right? I mean, because it's a framing question, right? Where do we put the backstop, right? Mm-hmm. And so the Planning Commission put the backstop here, right, and the Houghton Community Council put it here, and it's their job to make a decision.
We're going to bring this back to Houghton Community Council because of new information provided to the City Council, and see if they wanted to either stay the same or make a change to the recommendation. Has to come back to Houghton Community Council eventually anyway, so we thought we'd kind of talk about that ahead of time before we get to a final decision. Houghton Community Council members were interested in hearing the Planning Commission perspective on this.
And also, John added something that I wasn't aware of that I'd like to hear. Mm-hmm. Your comment about if this goes through, that we would see driveways that are... go ahead. No, seriously, tell them, John. I mean, you're in the business.
Well,
you could see a gigantic driveway.
I think that's tertiary to the main comment, and that the way it was presented to City Council, the stormwater manual updates and the zoning updates were tied together. We agree on everything except the four exemptions in the zoning code. So one of the recommendations was to maybe split up the stormwater manual from the zoning code issues, the exemptions, to see if we can't get the stormwater code passed with everybody's unanimous blessing on that, and then leave the exemptions in the plan in the zoning code for a separate discussion so we can meet the deadline from the state to be in sync with the state policies from the Department of Ecology.
Could I add one clarification?
Yeah, right.
So the Surface Water Design Manual has already been adopted by council.
Right.
So that part is done. What the council was, or what the recommendation is to come back with all of the zoning code changes except this one where there's disagreement, or rather to split it into two ordinances, one which contains sort of everything that they agree on, and then one with this one, the exemption provision.
Yeah. Thank in fact, Dorian has a slide that talks about the options here. Yeah. So here. Maybe we can put that up on the...
Yeah.
Well, I don't know that I have a slide that actually shows the different ordinances. It's just, as Jenny mentioned, there would be two ordinances. One has everything else, and then one would have... at this point, it would have the Planning Commission recommendation because they're typically the body that makes the recommendation to the City Council. So that would be their recommendation for this section for that second ordinance. And if the Council chose to go with the Houghton Community Council recommendation, they wouldn't need to have another ordinance because that would be leaving the text as it currently is in the code. Yeah. So the other thing we did want to mention was that the council was supportive of this future work program task that you had discussed a little bit about talking about open space and maybe having the zoning code regulate open space rather than impervious surface, because that really is something that should better be handled in the surface water design manual. So this is something that we could come back next year and sort of evaluate, like, what are the issues that are important on a single family lot for open space, you know, and really involve the community on that rather than kind of having this sort of back approach to expanding lot coverage through exemptions to lot coverage, and that maybe instead we would establish what the open space percentage should be, like 50%, and if it were going to be expanded, if it were going to be reduced, rather, that could happen through that process rather than reducing it through this process. So anyway, that's something we could come back to next year. And then we did talk, Eric and La Liberty and John Kapler presented the rationale from each of the bodies for their recommendations, and that's on the screen. So I don't know if you'd want to revisit that or add to that. That's kind of the question for that we were bringing to Houghton, if you wanted to maybe provide clarification or, you know, additional rationale for that recommendation or, you know, change that in any way. So, again, those are reported to the council.
In the interest of moving this along, I'm just reading the body language here, and I don't think that the Planning Commission has much interest in making any changes to it. But what I was hoping is that we might agree that if we could defer the process until it's part of a comprehensive looking at open space rather than trying to tie it into this, that makes more sense, and just put it on the work program for next year. That's what I would like to see us agree on. And if we and then try to get it done next year.
And I guess more specifically, breaking this into two parts so we could get a majority of it passed at the December 13th City Council meeting. December 13th, is that right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Does that make sense to you guys?
I see head nodding.
Okay. Yeah, that's all we're asking. We're not asking you to agree with us. We're just saying let's make it part of a comprehensive plan next year.
Yeah.
Study.
Yeah, right. I think that was
kind of where we were last time.
Yeah, we want this to be part of our work.
Good.
Program for next year.
All right, then we're all on the same page.
But just to be clear, that leaves the exemptions in place right now. So
until we
depends on what the City Council does.
Right.
That's true.
Okay.
So that's resolved. What the Planning Commission is saying? You'd want to leave it all of them in then?
No.
So you'd be changing
no.
your recommendation?
Well, I that's not what I
defer heard. Action until yeah, it's part action. Of a comprehensive.
I think. Well, I think we should be clear. I think. Well, I don't know, actually.
Because that isn't the recommendation that has gone to the City Council.
What I have heard from the Commission is that the recommendation remains, but that we still want this to be part of our work program for next year, and we are supportive of staff's idea to for the Council meeting to split the ordinance into two. Is that – I saw a head nodding while I was talking there. Is that what I'm hearing? Glenn? Is that clear? Okay.
Yes. And if I can jump in, and then whether or not the matter, the remaining matter, that piece, the exceptions, would be entirely deferred, which is what the Houghton Community Council recommendation is, or whether or not the Planning Commission recommendation would be implemented prior to that discussion that you all agree should be done next year. I think that's the matter before the City Council
will make that choice. Right.
Okay. Thank you.
That was all. We just wanted to have that discussion with you. Thank you. So with that, we have administrative reports. I was impressed with that first one.
I hope you all had a nice Thanksgiving. just to recap a couple of things. The next Planning Commission meeting is December 8th. We'll be talking about the planning work program that evening. And then the joint meeting between the Houghton Community Council and Planning Commission on December 15th, as we talked about earlier with the Houghton Everest and 6 week quarter study, and then the rest of the meetings of December are canceled.
Yep. Okay. And then since this is a joint meeting, the Planning Commission always has an opportunity for the audience to make comments at the end of the meeting. Is there anybody in the audience who would care to do that? Okay. With that. Whoop. Oh, no. We have a meeting after this.
Oh, okay.
Joint meeting with the Planning Commission adjourned. We'll take a 2-minute recess and...